John Redfern, Reel 5.
The CEO said, well, John, he said, you've had a pretty hectic time, but he said, we will give you a restful beginning. He said, you had better be put into the reserve platoon company, reserve company, which I did do. And I've forgotten something, and I will go back to it. On our way up to Casino, I was approached by my colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Nangle, about going to Rome. This was on our way up from Naples. And he said, was I a Catholic? I said, yes. He said, right. He said, we will visit the Pope in the Vatican. I said, yes, certainly. And he said, well, you and I will go there. And when we went, I went in the CEO's Jeep, and we got to Rome, and we found our way to the Vatican, and we approached the authorities there. He said, yes, he said, at 10 o'clock, the Pope will be giving audiences. And so at 10 o'clock, we presented ourselves, and we met the Pope, Pope Pius X. And he presented us with medals and a picture of himself. And wished us luck in everything we did and gave us his blessing. And from there, we rejoined the battalion on his way up to Casino.
Was Colonel Nangle a Catholic as well?
No. Definitely not. But he wished to visit the Pope. So we went. And that was that. Anyway, to carry on.
Where had the battalion got to by the time you rejoined them?
Pretty well up at Casino. I'm sorry, what am I talking about? This was after Casino. Yeah. They were at the Gothic Line. And they'd gone through the Gothic Line and they were at the next line, the...
Don't worry, I forget what they called.
Yes, I forgot what they called it. But they were at the next line fighting there. And I went and joined the reserve platoon. And
what state were the battalion in by the time you rejoined them?
Very good. It had had its casualties in Casino, and it had been all reorganized with people from Benevento, and but there was a full battalion and full of the joys of spring.
What had you thought about the Gurkha soldier?
I thought them fantastic soldiers. They didn't care who they fought or what they did, as long as they had implicit confidence in their officers. They would do anything for you.
Did they have that confidence?
Oh yes, very much so. Especially at Casino, where they really were tried.
What happened to you next?
Well, I was with the reserve platoon, and my main job there, it was a fighting platoon, and I had really to watch out for any infiltration in the rear of the battalion. That was my main job. And my second job was to liaise with the quartermaster and bring up any supplies that were required by the battalion. And I liaised with the colonel and the quartermaster. One day I was going up and with my platoon, and on the way back, I'd sent my platoon forward back, and I was coming back by jeep, and suddenly I heard a terrific sound of jeeps and things in my rear. So I looked behind me and saw a cavalcade with flags and things. So I told my driver to stop on the right of the road and let this cavalcade go by. And as it was going by, as it came abreast with me, I saw all the flags there, and the car stopped, and I saw it was General Montgomery. And to this day, I'm not sure whether it was him or his substitute, because I understood that he was in England at the time. Anyway, it was General Montgomery. And he looked at me. He said, "Where do you come from?" I said, "I'm the 1st Battalion, the 9th Gurkhas, sir." "Oh," he said, "I've just been speaking to your commanding officer," he said, "about your next phase in the attack, in the battle." I said, "Oh, yes, sir." He said, "I'm very, very pleased with what's been happening." I said, "Thank you very much, sir." He said, "Right," he said, "in the back of my car you'll find some cigarettes." I said, he said, "Will you take 10 cigarettes per man?" He said, "What's your battalion strength?" I said, "820. With 14 officers, sir." He said, "Right," he said, "take 10 cigarettes for the men and 20 for the officers." I said, "Right, sir." And I went into the back and started loading up Will's Gold Flake. And he saw me. He said, "No," he said, "give them V for victory." And I thought to myself, well, they ruddy well won't smoke those. Anyway, I took them and filled it up, and I took Gold Flake. I took more than the 14 for the officers, and loaded them all in. He said, "You got them?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Right," he said, "don't forget to, when the rations go up with them, to say that they're from General Montgomery." I said, "I won't forget, sir." And I thought to myself, well, I don't think the men will either, but anyway.
Were V for victory is bad?
Pardon?
Were V for victory is bad?
They were these wretched Egyptian things which were made of anything. No one would smoke them, least of all the Gurkhas.
What did they do with them then?
I believe they sent them up, but I think they used them as barter with the locals that were about the place. But they're very heavy smokers, the Gurkhas. Well, they were. And the cigarette and cup of tea is what they favour very, very much. Mug of tea. And that was that. And then, after that, it wasn't very long before we were withdrawn back to Taranto to go to Greece. And I was then made battalion liaison officer between brigade and the battalion. And therefore I was with Brigade HQ under a brigadier.
You found the name, I think it says Saunders Jacobs.
Yes.
Don't worry too much about that, no. I think, because that's on record anyway.
Yeah. And it appeared that I was his, besides being liaison officer, I was his security guard as well, because everywhere he went, I had to go with him as his minder. And when we were in Piraeus, he used to go in his jeep, and I would have to sit behind and keep a lookout for anything that might happen. And also during that period of time, he was going to make an attack across the dock from the south to the north, because when we landed in Greece, our artillery was on the island of Aegina, which was about 10 miles offshore, and we went in with the Gurkhas, the Leicesters, and the artillery volunteers who volunteered to become infantry because they had nothing very much to do. And we trained them, and they were very, very useful. Anyway, he said to me one day, Johnny said, tonight I want you to go across the dock to the north and see if there are any enemy of any description on the other side.
This is at the Piraeus.
In Piraeus. And so at 1 o'clock in the morning, I got my Tommy gun and started to go across. I found my way across one of the dock entrances and got to the other side. And I wandered. There was very, very wide space, empty space, the other side, and it was very dark. And I wandered around, and I went down as far as I could to the bottom, found nothing, looked in the dock buildings, nothing there. And Kate started to come back when I was suddenly fired on from the perimeter of the dock to the north of me. And I got down and I waited. No more fire ensued. So after a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, I got up and returned the way I'd come. No more firing. And I reported back to the brigadier the following morning. And from that, he made his plan of attack for 48 hours later, which it was very, very successful. And we got the north. When we arrived there, there was no electricity. The Elas had destroyed everything. And I found just north of the dock side an electricity substation. And I got hold of the engineers and I said to them, well, what can you do about it? And they said, well, give us 24 hours and we'll have some light for you. I said, well, what's wrong? He said, well, no damage, but he said, what they've done is they've blocked every single pipe that they can find which circulates the water to keep the place cool, and blocked it with rags and anything, stones, rocks, etc. I said, do you want any help? He said, no. He said, we can do it ourselves. So, which he proceeded to do, and I reported to the brigadier that he'd have light within 24 hours. He said, good. And we got it within 24 hours. And then it got a bit stronger every day as they repaired and got rid of the rags and things which they'd found. And so we got all light in the port. And then they came to me and said, well, can we get some help? So I approached a brigadier and he said, yes, he said, I think this can be arranged. He said, go and see the civilian work officer, and gave me an address down in Piraeus. And I went there and I was given authorization to employ 20 people. So I went back and we got hold of 20, I presume, friends of friends and friends. But nevertheless, they were workers. And we got that station going properly. We got the sewage and everything working. And we got quite a little. Brigadier was very, very pleased anyway with what we had done. In the meantime, the main battle for Lofos Castella had begun, and this was taken by the Gurkhas, after which we were withdrawn, and sent round to Volos. Now Volos, before that, the peace was declared, or an armistice was signed with the opposing forces. And we were sent round to Volos by boat, and we encamped. We had the brigade HQ in Volos, and we had the 9th Gurkhas outside. And
why was this armistice agreed on?
Because they'd had enough. The LS had surrendered. They'd surrendered. And what happened was that we had to, they were, all their troops, plus the general commanding of the LS, had to come to Volos and be escorted by us to Tricola, where their headquarters were and where everything was going to go on. It was also a prisoner of war camp for all the people that they'd captured.
So this attack on the Castella that you mentioned, the Castella was in the hands of ALAS?
Yes, it was.
Did you see anything of the fighting to take the Castella?
I did not see anything, but it was difficult because the higher they went, they had all the German positions to take, the ALAS had to take. I mean, they were... They were proper positions which the Germans had used to protect the port. There was one episode that happened, and that was that during the fighting, there was something that I have forgotten to say, and that was that during the course of the fighting, the Gurkhas and the Leicesters were finding it very, very difficult to clear the streets because it was all street fighting and they were very narrow. And we had to clear every single house. You had to watch out because I personally saw little boys running messages from the LS positions to various other places. And we weren't interested in the children, although we knew that what they were doing. And also we found certain of the priests were not doing everything that they should do to be neutral. We had any priests that we found, we used to search them because they used to keep possibly a 36 grenade underneath their hat or a rifle stuck down their trouser legs. So we used to search them as well. And the brigadier gave an order that all weapons in our area had to be handed in, irrespective of what they were. And so again, I had to arrange the reception of all these guns. There were shotguns, air rifles, old Greek rifles from the Albanian War, and etc., etc. We had to tag them and everything else, and which was done. And then the brigadier had a brainwave. He issued an order to the Gurkhas. He said, "Tomorrow you can discard all your rifles and just go in with the cookery, but make sure you don't hurt them." So that's what happened. And instead of clearing a few hundred yards, we cleared a mile or two.
Clearing what?
The houses and streets of Piraeus Harbour, outside the harbour, which was a built-up area.
Who was in the houses?
Civilians. Civilians and shopkeepers and all that sort of thing, because it was all around the area. I mean, there was the station there and the shops and houses and everything, businesses, wine, merchant, warehouses and things. And Piraeus was quite a big area, port.
Did they hurt anybody?
They didn't, no, they didn't cause any casualties, but they cleared the whole place. And then at 6:30, the brigadier received an order from the GOC Athens saying that he'd had a complaint that we were fighting dirty. And that we were in future to keep our cookery sheathed and to fight properly. So the next day, fighting was resumed, and we lost one of our best company commanders through sniper's rifle as a result.
What did you feel about that order to stop
I felt it was wrong that the GOC should have issued this order without consultation with the brigadier and the COs concerned, just to issue it on say-so of the enemy was not right. Appeasement? Well, I don't know. But I personally, in my own opinion, felt that it was a wrong order. It caused casualties, which was our objective, which we were trying to avoid. For our own forces, anyway. From there, as I say, after Lafoto Castellas was taken, an armistice was come to, and we went to Volos. And from there, we had to escort the LAS and their troops for 10 to 12 miles outside Volos, after which they could proceed to Tricola under their own steam. And the whole army, it was really fantastic to see them. There was this general on horseback and all his minions on horseback, and then these lowly troops in rags and tatters and God knows what scuffling after him. And they went on to Tricola. And then I was informed that I had to arrange the reception for about 6,000 British PWs to come back through Volos and go back to Athens and England. So that meant that somehow or other I had to find baths, I had to arrange for disinfestation, clothes, food, and
where had these prisoners come from?
Tricola.
How had they come to be there?
They'd all been taken there by the LAS.
Were there many of them?
About 6,000.
6,000?
Yeah, somewhere around about there. May have been less, but I have an idea. 6,000 sticks in the mind, but may have been less. But anyway, whatever it was certainly in the thousands.
And they'd been captured by LAS?
And they'd been captured by LAS.
From where?
From everywhere that LAS was fighting, which was all over Greece. And they'd been concentrated into Tricola.
So
mainly from Athens. I mean, to give you an example, in Athens we had an Indian bakery up above Athens. And they used to supply all the Gurkhas and the other Indians with the bread that was required for them to eat. And they were captured by the LAS. And they were marched from Athens up to Tricola. And on the way, they were robbed of all their clothes. They hadn't any their boots. And when they arrived there, they were pretty well naked in bitterly cold weather. And no one had given them food, water, or anything on the way. They had to rely entirely upon the peasants, which was not a very happy reliance, because majority of the Greeks, of course, in those days were LAS and therefore anti-British.
And were there many fighting soldiers amongst them?
Not all that many, no. They were mostly administrative, some RAF and administrative people in the main.